Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker. Earn $14.50 per hour in an essential job, plus get money for college. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Time now for the V Show with Bob Valvano on your sports station, ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Bobby V.
Hello, kids. Did you miss me yesterday? Don't answer. Back today. Thanks to be with you. Glad to be with you. Thankful to be with you. I was going to say thankful to be with you and glad to be with you, and I said thanks to be with you. Which didn't make any sense. It's a Thursday. How are you? In a few minutes, I'm going to share with you, for my money, the funniest follow on Twitter I think I've ever found. That's the truth, and it's from the most unlikely source. I can't read any of the guy's posts without laughing out loud. It's a riot. So if you're looking for some amusement, which I was yesterday, this will be the guy that will do that for you. So thanks for being with us. Fred Calgill was not able to be with us Tuesday, so he's going to join us here momentarily, or at least we are told he's going to. We'll look forward to visiting with him, and we'll talk about a lot of things, including a soundbite, which 90% of you probably already heard because it's brilliant, from Roy Williams. I like old Roy. It was hilarious. That was great. We'll play that in this hour as well. So we'll have lots of amusement in this first hour, and some of it will even be sports-related, which is kind of when you hit the Grand Slam. Now, the Twitter guy won't be. He's got nothing to do with sports, but you'll thank me, trust me. But the Roy Williams soundbite is classic. We'll play that in just a little bit. What else we got? I don't know what else we got going today. We might have some other things, but Nick hasn't told me yet. So when he does, I'll pass it on to you. So that's where people who are nice enough to ask, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. Thanks for asking about kind of the health issues yesterday. The back and everything was just awful. So I treated myself like an athlete. Don't laugh out loud. I did all the regimen that they do. I did massage, then I did dry heat, then I did hydrotherapy, then I did ice, then I did stretching. So now we're going to do the same routine today and hope it makes some kind of a difference.
I was talking with Fred. I hope your back is feeling better, but what did I miss? Did you lay out the show? Did you tell him that we're going to have Thursdays with Fred?
Show? I don't know what the hell's going to happen.
I told you in your ear. Did I not send the text? I didn't send you the show sheet, did I? Ah, that's bad producing. Bad producer. But good producer, maybe, because I have two of your favorites coming on today. We have Fred Calgill, who's on the line right now. We'll get him potted through in just a second. And then we have Jay Billis coming up at 1 p.m. We'll talk Broadway. No, he's going to talk college basketball, of course. We'll do a little conference call, and then maybe there'll be some more surprises down the road. And surprises mean I don't really know because I have feelers out there, and people haven't got back to me.
Well, so, we teased going through the
yeah, you're going to look at
the blue ribbon book.
Yeah,
here.
Chris Dorch's. Yeah, so we can do that. Oh, I do have a funny soundbite from you about something called Meat Mountain, and it's not near as dirty as it sounds. Trust me. That I think I sent it to you yesterday. A guy took on the Meat Mountain Challenge, and it was funny. So I think we can play some of that audio. Process has gone big time now. We might delve into that a little bit. We got plenty of goodies today. But we should kick things off with one, Master Calgill.
All right, Mr. Fred Calgill from WLKY joins us. Fred, when you don't come on my week is all, like, I think it's Tuesday now because you're joining us, and yet it's not. It's Thursday, so I'm all discombobulated.
Yeah, I am too. I understand. I'm a total creature of habit that way. So I was disappointed it couldn't work out on Tuesday, but I'm thrilled that we were able to work it out today, which is my daughter Gracie's 23rd birthday. So it's a big
deal. Oh, my God, she's not 23. No way.
True. Yeah, she's doing really well. Just got a big job in Memphis with Amazon. I'm just so proud of her. She's come so far so fast. It's one of the, you know how it is as a dad. I mean, your kids are priceless, and when they have success, it's just exponential. I mean, it's like a party. And to see her doing this, we all got together last night, and it was very special.
Well, tell her, A, congratulations, and B, she's got a hell of a lot of nerve growing up. We won't
indeed. Well, we're always parents, no matter what. I mean, no matter what their age, I will always be their dad. And that,
well,
you know,
good for her. So that's a good happy.
You look at this. I worry all the time. I worry that they're okay, what they're doing. I mean, I fight this fight. Yeah.
But you're almost Italian. That's how my mother was. My mother had My mother had a condition I like to refer to as totophobia, which is fear of everything. She was unbelievable. She could find reason to be nervous about. I was watching a game once with her. I mean, she was around basketball long enough with my brothers and my father and me, so she could discuss the game reasonably intelligently. But we're watching. I'll never forget this. It was way back when Joey Meyer was at DePaul, and I don't know who had the games here, but in New York, the NBC affiliate had them, Channel 4, and they were showing the game Saturday afternoon, and it was a close game, and they made a big basket late, DePaul, and this is back in their heyday when they were playing at the Horizon and getting like 16,000, 17,000 people at a game. And so they take a bucket, you know, it's the one that kind of is going to clinch the game for them, puts them up like six with less than a minute to go, and the guy gets fouled. It's going to be a three-point play, and the place is going crazy, and the announcer's smart enough to lay out, so they're just showing the crowd shot. You know, they're scanning the crowd. And it's close. I think it's a sellout, if not darn close, and they're just showing the people jumping and going crazy, and, you know, as I said, she would have been know enough about the game to say something. If she knew the coaches through Jimmy, oh, that's a good win for Joey Meyer, or, you know, wow, DePaul's pretty good this year, or something, that was a good bucket. What a, you know, that was a good shot he made. Instead, she says, look at all those heads. I said, what? She said, all those heads. I mean, suppose the grandstand collapses, you know, and it falls, and all those people would be terrible. It'll be, oh, my God.
Well, I'm fairly sure. Funny.
Fairly well, certain the arena's not going to collapse.
Exactly. For me, I never worried like this until our kids were born. I mean, as I told Gracie more than once in the time, especially girls with dads, I told Gracie, you know, and I've said it more than once to her, that the world became a more special and more fragile place when you were born. And our daughter, Scarlett, same thing. Just, you know, it's wonderful. It's the best thing that ever happened to me, other than, I mean, getting married and all that. Our kids are priceless. But there's a price tag that goes with that, and that is that I've become much more, reaching for a word here, much more, not concerned, but just when you, as I told Gracie this morning, I said, you know, I was worried about you. It's like putting a $10 million diamond ring on a boat. I would never do that. So you're more priceless than that. So anytime you do anything that's remotely, you know, on edge, I lose my mind. It just, so you have to just accept that you have this kind of unconditional love from your dad, and that I think you're priceless, and just humor me. And so she said, okay.
That's exactly what she should say. Speaking of your kids, you know, your son's Lego show is on one of the things now, like Tubi or Netflix or something. I saw it the other day. Did you know that? They're airing all those shows.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
So,
I'll have to find out which one it is, and I'll let you know. Yeah.
Did you know that Lego Masters, Christian's literally sitting next to me. Did you know Lego Masters is on Netflix?
Really?
Yeah.
So, it might not. There's so many of them now. I don't know if it's Netflix or Pluto or Tubi or, you know, but you go search around, noodle around a little bit, you'll find it. It's up there.
He said he knew that it was on Hulu, but he wasn't sure about the other places. But
it's somewhere else, I think.
Okay, so he's looking right now, as a matter of fact. So thank you for bringing that up. It was a year ago.
Time do fly. So what the hell were you doing Tuesday that you couldn't come on and play with us? What was happening?
There was a news conference with Rick Stansbury at noon with Western Kentucky, and I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Western, because of, at least in part because of Rick, but also because Gracie went to school there. And, it's funny. I always covered Western from the time I got here in 1986, and frankly, our market did not cover much of Western then. And I would like to believe that at least in part the reason that game was raised both for IU as well as Western is because I pushed it about as hard as I could, because I knew this was like, you know, this little diamond in the rough. And, you know, it's the modern, now fast forward to the modern day, this is a massive game tonight at 7 o'clock with Western at Houston. This is a very rare opportunity late season that a mid-major gets a shot, you know, at a program that's bigger than it, that has enormous value. Stansbury said, you know, we win, we're in, meaning as an at-large to the NCAA term. He goes out and he qualified it then and said, you know, obviously we can't fall off a cliff after that, but, you know, he believes that that's how big this game is. I mean, mid-majors, as you know, only normally get shots at big, you know, maybe Power 5 schools when it's early in the season, November, December. To have something like this in late February is enormously special and fun. And he teased me. He's like, you know, Fred, you know, normally on a Thursday night, you'd probably be watching Bachelor. I'm not even sure what night that show really runs. He goes, but I guarantee you Thursday night at 7 o'clock Eastern time, you'll be watching us. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm totally in on this game tonight. So he's a great guy. I just think he's one of those overachieving guys that has sort of not gotten his just due over the years. I mean, he was a wonderful coach at Mississippi State and did a lot of great, unprecedented things, I think, in the program's history, and never was really fully appreciated there, and has done a great job at Western Kentucky now, and he's got a great team led by, among others, Charles Bassey, who's just one of the best big men of the country, and I would like to believe has a future in the NBA. So if they could win this game tonight, I mean, right now they're projected anywhere from a 10 to a 12 seed, depending on which service you look at. I mean, if they can beat Houston, which is number 6, I think, in the net rankings, I mean, that would be the signature win for the program, no question.
Well, it's a lot of, you know, I never in a million years would I wish this on anybody again, but that's one of the byproducts of this crazy year, is teams that are trying desperately to play themselves in are taking advantage of teams that need games, and we saw it again last night. You know, Carolina scheduled Marquette on the spur of the moment, and then Marquette went to Chapel Hill and beat them, and that's a resume builder for them. And so Western's got that chance against Houston. So that's a great opportunity for them, no question about that.
Yeah, but I think it'll be a fun game to watch regardless. I mean, as Rick said, win or lose, this is just a real gift for us, and it's a win-win situation in terms of you can't buy this kind of advertising. And he's absolutely right. I mean, no matter what, there are very few national games on Thursday night, and to his point, almost everybody else is going to be watching them. And then that you cannot buy that kind of publicity for a program which, you know, doesn't get them enough of that, I think, and just really deserves it. I mean, it's a program that went to the Final Four in 1971. It's had a couple of Sweet 16s. I think one back in maybe 2008-09 was the most recent one. I'm reaching for, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Darren Horn, I think, might have been, a part of that. So, I mean, here's a chance again now. And for, frankly, a fan base which just loves Hilltopper basketball. I mean, it's, you know, going back to Coach Diddle and all that, there's just a long storied history in the thing. And, I think you are this way a little bit. You find these little programs that just sort of steal your heart, or stories that steal your heart, or people that steal your heart along the way. And these guys did. And when Gracie was in school there, I'd go down to at least one game a year, and the program has not only come so far, but the campus has come so far. I think it's the best-kept secret for college students in the United States, one of the best bargains anyway. I mean, by comparison to some others, I mean, as much as half or less the price of some schools, and yet a great campus experience, a small town, college town, just checks all the boxes. So I hope they win tonight. I think it'd be exceptionally cool.
And, you know, I'm kind of in that boat, but I also am one of those that likes to see programs that for some reason get overlooked. I mean, not just because they're little programs, but, like, you know, you look at the national databases of college teams and teams that have, you know, certain records, the winningest programs and things like that. Western always sneaks onto those charts because they've been, you know, they've been good for so long, but you don't ever talk about them that way. It's kind of this. There's players I always like that too. That I used to say that about Stan Musial. Stan Musial was a great, 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 great player. And when you talked about the great players of that era, you're always talking about Mickey Mantle and Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and all these other. Then somebody might finally say, you know, this was pretty good, Stan Musial. That's how kind of Western
exactly,
is, you know.
I guess.
Who's got the winning programs around here? Well, Louisville, Kentucky, Indiana. So, you know who else was really good? Western was really good. So they never get in the first mention.
That's very well articulated, Bob. I always think of Curt Flood because of everything he did for the players, you know, behind him, and frankly never got to take advantage of that, and if anything, you know, was punished for, you know, helping break the reserve clause. And, you know, guys that not only did it on the field but also left a legacy which resonates for generation after generation after generation. And I think Curt Flood is on my short list in baseball for having done that. For every, you know, zillion-dollar guy now, I mean, there was Curt Flood, I mean, who broke it open so that, you know, there was no longer, you know, without being too brutal, I think it's true, slavery in baseball. I mean, they were basically tied to a team, and they were crushed by the financial implications of that. And Curt Flood, was the test of it and broke it and let guys become free agents. And it echoed and still echoes for generations in the future.
Western, for the people scoring at home, has the 16th most victories in the history of the NCAA and is the eighth best winning percentage.
I did not know that.
Percentage in NCAA history. How about that?
That is cool. Yeah, I mean, it's a storied program. It's a number of just incredible ball players, but, you know, they just have never really been in the spotlight. So this thing resonates tonight. This is, no matter what happens, this is just a gift to them that, you know, normally at the end of the season, they're facing conference opponents only, and no knock on Conference USA, but it's a mid-major situation, and the value of winning these games in February and maybe early March don't anywhere come close to the value of beating a Houston right now. I mean, and Western, to their credit, I mean, they beat Alabama, this season, back in December. Alabama, I think, is eighth in the net rankings and just missed beating West Virginia, blowing a big lead. And I think West Virginia may be 15th in the net rankings or close to that. So two top 20 programs, they've beaten one, a near miss on the other. I mean, and they've done this year after year. They'll sneak up and bite somebody in the butt who is, you know, much more on the radar than there. Now, in Western's, you know, total disclosure, their net ranking is around 75th. But, you know, part of that function is, as you know, the teams they play and all of that, and they're not, they don't get shots very often at programs which would, by definition, lift them. As an example, when Louisville went into the brief, you know, nosedive because of COVID and then the loss to North Carolina, it dropped 20 spots. It dropped from, like, 33rd to 55th in the blink of an eye. That said, by Louisville winning against Notre Dame, and if it's able to win maybe at Duke, which would be huge, and or one of the last two games in the last week of the regular season, including Virginia Tech and Virginia, they would jump dramatically because the level of competition they're playing. Western doesn't enjoy that luxury. So this is the brass ring that they need. This will be so huge if they can win. I hope they do.
Talking to Fred Calgo from WLKY, this is an awkward thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. When I got word that Tiger Woods was in that very serious accident, nobody, unless you're an incredibly, incredibly cruel person, would, you know, hope that he was seriously injured or have no compassion for if he were injured. But I'll be candid with you. I was very, very pleased to hear it was not because he was driving under the influence. I mean,
that's just the
truth. I mean, I've talked about it on the show before. I lost a cousin to a drunk driver a long time ago, and to me, that's a difficult thing to overlook. So, to be clear, I'm not saying if he were, I'd be saying, well, I hope he died or something stupid like that. But is it a fair statement to say it's easier to find compassion to know that it literally appears it was just an accident, no other mitigating factors?
Yeah, it's logical that a lot of people went there right away because of the past performances. That is, unfortunately, I mean, part of the legacy of Tiger Woods that he has to, you know, live up to, like it or not. And it must have been distracted driving is all I can figure. It was a dangerous road to begin with. And, you know, we all drive a lot. And I desperately tell my kids not to, you know, look at your phone when you're driving. But, you know, when you're, let's say you're lost or going to a new place, you're on your phone because you've got, you know, for me anyway, you got maps and it's telling you what to do. And so you look down to see where you are. So, I mean, and the modern cars, I mean, and I've got one now that's got one actually in a little monitor in the dashboard, so that helps, but that is still distracted driving. I would speculate, based on limited information, that that's what happened to Tiger Woods. He was distracted on a dangerous road because there were no brakes. There were no skid marks. So my guess is he looked down, he looked up, it was too late. He was already headed over and, you know, to this awful car accident. And luckily, in a vehicle, this Genesis vehicle, which is the premium line of Hyundai, that had at least 10 airbags, or else he probably would not have survived the crash. Mm-hmm. And the moment I heard this, it was at like 7 in the morning local time, like 10 Eastern, I heard just a few minutes after apparently it happened, I thought of Ben Hogan and what happened to him a half century ago. Driving in the morning in the fog, going to a new event with his wife in the car, and suddenly a bus is going on head-on to them, and Ben Hogan leaned across to protect his wife in a head-on collision with the bus, and had he not done that, he'd have been dead because the steering wheel went right into the seat of the driver. As it was, he was almost catastrophically injured and had a long road back. But he was able to recover, and in spite of all the odds against him, and most people speculating that he would not survive the crash, much less recover to play major professional golf, he was able to go on to win a bunch of tournaments and majors. But there are some differences. I mean, Hogan had no pre-existing illnesses or conditions, and Tiger's had 5 back surgeries, one of which he was just still recovering from. He's had knee surgeries and ankle surgeries, and now he's got a crushed right leg and a crushed ankle. Apparently, I was reading a story in the New York Times today that most catastrophic car injury experts say that the right leg is the one, inevitably, that is most vulnerable, because most people, when they're in a car accident, try to slam on the brakes. The instinct is to take your right leg and to go for the brake, even if it's too late. And that exposes the leg because it's so polarized and so fixed. It exposes the leg to trauma in an exponential way versus the relaxed left leg. And so these are injuries, you know, without getting too graphic, that were things that just took dramatic work by surgeons just to put it back together again. And You know, here's hoping most of all that he survives. I've said, as you know, more than once on this show, I believe his value in the long run is in as an ambassador for the game, as a mentor to the people behind him. I mean, the value added of what Tiger Woods did and how he changed the game forever and the influence he has in so many ways and so many levels, whether it's cultural or racial or golf. I mean, the best part about it is I think he's really starting to get it and has been getting it for a while, actually. Going back to even the PGA Championship at Valhalla in 2014, I saw a different Tiger than the one I saw in 2000. And I thought the other day, I mean, I've been blessed to have a number of pictures with high-profile people that have become people I've really respected, and not that I try to do that because I don't think that's terribly professional, but someone got a picture of me with Jack Nicklaus, and somebody got a picture of me with Muhammad Ali, and they're, you know, those things. I'm all about the pictures now in the modern day with smartphones that take good pictures, and I'd wished, looking back on it, that I was with Tiger in 2014 after one of his rounds, and that could have happened, and unfortunately didn't. But I've come full circle, or 180 degrees, rather, from where I was with him. I really struggled with him because there was a time when I don't think he got it, and through all of the things that he's gone through, the challenges off the course and the challenges to get back on the course, I've come to respect him so much. He's become a much different person, I think a much better person, and I really desperately hope that he's able to recover and at the very least play golf in a way that he can find joy, whatever that is. I mean, it would be just short of a miracle for him to compete again, I think if anybody can do it, he can. He has a will about him which, you know, is in the top 1% of people that I've ever met. I mean, he just has a drive and a will to overcome that has fueled him since he was a kid, and he'll really need it now because he's going to have a long and painful recovery, and I can't fathom being in his shoes laying in a bed in Los Angeles right now, the kind of pain he must be in. It's just, you and I both endured painful injuries and all of that, but this would be awfully difficult, I would think.
I got to confess, though, it did cross my mind about the story about Ben Hogan. For the people who don't know, I mean, he was almost killed. He won the U.S. Open where he could barely walk the 72 holes. I mean, he was hobbling and still won the championship. I could see Tiger saying, you know, that's going to be my inspiration. If Ben Hogan can do it, I can do it. I don't know. We'll see. Right now, like somebody said the other day, to talk about him playing should be so far on the back burner. He's got to be
sure, but it crosses your mind. I mean, especially after what he did in the Masters, I never thought he'd win again, much less win a major again, although I did say years ago that if he was going to win one more, that the Masters was the kind of tournament that would be, not the easiest, but the one that would seem most likely that he would win, given his skill set and the kind of course it is and all that, and the fact that it's repeated in the same location every year versus the other tournaments, which are not. So for him to come back, I still remember, you know, when he won it, I was in Arkansas for the Arkansas Derby, and I think I may have told the story with you before. It was Sunday morning, and the tournament was played early that day, the fourth round, because of weather issues. And we'd had a fun day at the Arkansas Derby and slept in on Sunday morning. I'm at my cousin's house in Little Rock. We'd had a great time. And woke up just kind of groggy and look up, and my cousin's husband's watching Tiger, and I kept thinking that must have been the third round, but he's wearing the classic Sunday colors. And he's like, they moved it up and all this. He's glued. He's not a golf fan, but he's a sports fan. And he is glued to this. And then I became transfixed. And just, it was like watching a Disney movie. And the kind of comeback that he, you know, reached that day. And I guarantee you that will fuel him to do it again. If anybody can do it, I would think it would be him.
All right, last thing before I let you go. How about what's going on at Freedom Hall on Friday? Where Bellarmine will play on national television, their first year in Division One, they'll play for the conference championship. They're in a dead tie in the standings with Liberty. They'll have one game. It's, for all intents and purposes, a championship game. And in their first year in the league on national television on ESPNU to play for the championship. I wanted to read you this because I think you'd get a kick out of it. Our friend Myron Medcalf, who writes for ESPN.com, writing about the ASUN championship, and he said this, which I think was funny. Hang on, I got to scroll to it right here. It says, last summer, Bellarmine, a former Division II power located in Louisville, Kentucky, accepted the Atlantic Sun's invitation to join their league and start a four-year transition to NCAA tournament eligibility. What did Scott Davenport and Bellarmine do with that invitation? They kicked in the door, ate all the food in the house, and decided to snatch the league's title in year one. So I think that's good. Would you like to come in? Sure. Boom. What are we eating here? So
exactly.
That's pretty remarkable. It's a great story. It really is. It should be a good game, by the way. These two teams are very similar in terms of they share the basketball. They're well coached. Should be a good game. I hope they don't get caught up in the moment. I hope they just go out and do what they do and play well. I mean, they played on national television before when they played for the Division II National Championship, but this is a little – I don't know. It just comes across as a little different, and it'll be really interesting to see. I hope they react and play very well with composure and just do their thing. If they do, they should put on quite a show for the hometown fans.
People over the years have asked me why I do this for a living, why from the time I was 16 years old I fell in love with this, why I was a sports fan to begin with. And I tell stories like this. It started when I was little. I mean, and the Giants, football Giants, were awful. The Yankees were awful, mid-60s. And, finally they each had their day in the sun. And, the Giants people laughed at us for years. I remember being in fourth grade and all the kids were Cowboys fans in New York. And I'm a Giants fan. And they laughed at me. And to see Phil Simms lead this team to the Super Bowl win in 1986 was, it wasn't sex, but it was close. But to a much more, important point, it fueled me to love those underdog stories, to love what sports can do for people. And it's not about championships. It's wonderful when you do. It's not about, zillions of dollars. Oh, well, it's wonderful if you do. For me, it's about what it does for people that transforms their lives. It's a noble distraction and honorable from life's brutal realities. I remember Rick Pitino saying that years ago, and it totally stuck with me. It's true. What Scotty's done with this program, he's a guy that is the Pied Piper. He's the music man. He transforms lives. And he made these guys believe in something bigger than themselves, that they could be a part of something which is way bigger than any individual goals or anything else, to play for the other guy, to play for the team. It's all those things we espouse to, but you rarely get to enjoy or see or be a part of. And I've been blessed to be a part of a ride at my TV station where we went from nothing and were able to do a lot of things, and it's intoxicating. You've been a part of that. You've seen those kinds of things. And to cover stories like that for me is a joy. And to cover what Scotty's done this year is one of the joys of my career in 35 years in Louisville. Not because whether they win or lose that game or win the championship or not, but what he's made these guys do. And it just he's a special guy. And everybody, it's funny, he actually brought this up the other day when I was talking to him. He asked different questions about remembering things from the past. Name the top five this or the top five that, and for the most part they couldn't. And then he said, name one of the most important teachers in your life. And all of them right away were able to name one or more. And I believe in that so much. I'm a big person about teaching, as you know. I got a master's degree. I still hope to teach in either high school or college when this is all over. And part of the reason why is the magic that you can do that you make kids believe in things. So here's rooting for them to win. And I think putting Bellarmine on the fast track to be eligible to play for in the NCAA tournament is noble, honorable, and well-deserved. I mean, right now it's a four-year delay. There are all sorts of explanations why, including the transition and, protocols. I think it's about, frankly, delaying sharing the pie financially. That's just my opinion. Yeah, I mean, there's a four-year delay, really? So now they're trying to cut it to two, which I could live with two. Four is punishing. It's not, I don't think, fair. I mean, there are 350-plus now Division I teams, and I think the NCAA has tried to slow that down because so many schools in modern times, including Northern Kentucky, have made the jump. And so they put all these new protocols in to discourage people from doing it, frankly, I think. One man's opinion. And certainly it's hard to argue that, although they do. And so I think, hopefully the ASUN pitch to the NCAA to cut the punishing, kind of transition from 4 years down to two, I think is well-deserved. And really cool that the league is doing this because it gets, by Bellarmine winning, it wins. It's because it's generating a great story and puts this conference on the map. So I think these people get it, and Scotty, I cannot pat him on the back enough. I mean, he's job well done, no matter what happens from here. I mean, it's just really, really cool. Not something we see very often, that's for sure.
Fred, I'll talk to you soon. I'm glad you're able to join us today, even though you couldn't do it on Tuesday. Take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you next week someday, hopefully Tuesday, but whenever it works out. Rose, glad to have you. Thanks so much.
Safe travels, my friend.
All right, Fred Calgill, WLKY with us. We come back, I'm going to deliver on the tease I gave you, the funniest Twitter guy I follow. hilarious is all I can say to that. And we got some other things. Jay Billis comes up at the top of the hour, so I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to him. He's always got great stuff when he joins us. We'll talk with him. And your text, 437-9680, are welcome as well. So stay with us here as we roll on a Thursday edition of The V-Show on ESPN 680-1057.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here, on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
What'd you think of that version?
I was just about to ask you, whose version is that?
That is actually, it's been making waves. I saw it on Twitter. That's Post Malone. He did a cover of Hootie and the Blowfish's Only Want to Be With You for the Pokemon 25th anniversary. Yeah,
it's not bad.
Yeah,
well,
I got
it. It helps that the song is outstanding. Also, I mean, so you know, you got to really work to screw that song up.
Absolutely, that's definitely fair. But I mean, there's certain covers that you know people don't like,
yeah.
Even of great songs. And that's in recent memory, probably one of the most positively received ones I've seen so far.
Pretty good.
And Bet Rivers Twitter poll, should we put it up? Do you like Post Malone's cover of Hootie and the Blowfish?
Sure, why not? I have a beautiful one that's going up later. I'm very excited about it.
All right.
It's the definitive poll.
Ooh.
I don't know if I should say it Ron Tuesday Jeremy. Or use it today because I really like it. It's will you vote in this poll? Yes, no.
That's really funny. That's very dad jokey, but that's very good. That's very, very, very funny. I like that. Yeah, you should definitely put that up. Could you pot up just a teeny tiny little bit for
me?
Nope,
not touching anything. This guy's hilarious on Twitter. He's a politician from England. His name, I'm telling you, you'll thank me. He is a riot. And I don't think they're dad jokey. They're pretty freaking funny. He's a counselor. I guess, I don't know what that means in British politics. But he's a counselor for a town called Shadwell. I don't know where it is. I tried to look it up. It doesn't look like it's a super big town. But he is, I guess he runs that. He's the town director, for lack of a better word. I don't know. But all I know is he's a politician there. And I'm telling you, his tweets just make me laugh out loud. He's got a picture of this one. This one went viral. 177,000 plus likes. That's saying something. The guy's he's got 35,000 followers, and he's got 177,000 likes for this. There's pictures of them. If you can find him, you can find him under his Twitter name. His Twitter handle is CLLR, short for Counselor Battley, BATTLEY. CLLR, BATTLEY, Counselor Battley. And if you see the picture, it's even funnier, but I think just the text is funny. His wife, the text says, this is from about 2 weeks ago. My wife Lola will be selling her crocheted dolls in the precinct this Saturday. All proceeds go into the drop-in center. For God's sake, buy one. She's made 600 of the bloody things. They're all over the house. Every time I open the cupboard, it's like being attacked by Chucky. They are kind of disturbing looking. He's kind of just a kind of reminds me like a Parks and Recreation mindset. It's kind of a send off on a politician, except he's a real politician. This one says FFS for my stint at Shadwell Hospital Radio tonight. I booked an easy listening artist for a live session. Who do they send? Rat Watson, an industrial death metal singer from Luton. 6 patients have lapsed into comas and 14 have discharged themselves. God help us all. This is the one that I was reading to you before the show. I thought it was kind of funny. Okay, I will never apologize for classifying Nancy Potter's sex shop on Langley Street as essential retail. I didn't spend 10 years making Chadwell the erotic capital of the Northlands to have it smashed by COVID. The sex shops stay open, and that includes World of Rumpy Pumpy on the bypass.
World of Rumpy Pumpy?
This is good.
What a thrill. That's such an English sex name.
Thrilled to present the Average Citizens of the Year Awards at the Town Hall today. Winners were Stig Barnett, whose new paper shop is not too bad, Tina Pipe, whose front garden is dull but presentable, and Lollipop Lady Fran Wilkes, who sometimes forgets her lollipops, but she's okay. And there's a picture of ribbons, all of which say average, in the middle of them. It's the Average Citizens Awards. Oh, my God. This one, you got to see a picture. I don't know where he gets these things. It's a picture of some really crazy, you have to see it. It's a guy with, he's got one eye, he's holding his eyeball in his other hand. It's, you know, it's just, it says just back from judging the OAP embroidery contest, an event sadly marred by the winner, Edna Yulm, 89, who tested positive for drugs. She was tasered, handcuffed, and dragged off. I admit we should have gotten on this earlier. Everything about her crocheting screams, I'm an acid freak.
What?
You got to see the picture of the thing he put up there as if this was the winning crochet thing. Oh, my God, it's funny. All my life I've fought for equality. I'm proud to say we have a female education secretary, female head of recycling, female health and safety officer, and a female park keeper. Admittedly, it's all the same woman, Nina Potts. Great girl, gets a bit tired, but she's bloody versatile.
Yay.
Who does that as a politician? It's hilarious. I mean, they're just unbelievable. Oh man, this is he's quoting a Madonna tweet. It's a picture of Madonna. She's mad at somebody. I don't know who. It says the patriarchy continues to try and crush my neck with their heavy boots, cut off my life force, and take away my voice. Even those who call themselves artists, you know who you are. Death to the patriarchy, now and forever. So he puts a link to that tweet, and he writes, I know where this is coming from. We booked Madonna to open last year's church festival, then canceled at the last minute and booked Barbara Dixon. Let it go, Madonna. We sent you the $50 fee. Move on. Oh, my God. He's fantastic. Very, very good. Oh, man. Anyway, I think you'll be amused. They're all funny. I mean, does he ever write anything serious about his town?
Can you retweet this guy? And then retweet one, that way I can find him easy and follow.
There's a picture. He's got a picture of the building in town. It's a library, and there's big letters on the front of it, library, and the B is missing. It says L-I, and there's a space, R-A-R-Y. He says the council's thoughts and prayers are with Belinda Cook, who was knocked out today by a giant letter B that fell off the municipal library. Unfortunately, as a result of being flattened, she was unable to return her library book, and she will be fine. But get well soon, Belinda. Oh, my. He's very good. All right, I think I've retweeted him once before, but I'm going to send. If you're listening to the show and you want to see who it is, go to my Twitter, and I will, let's see. How would I do that? Do I just click on him and say, this is the follow I was talking about, or how would you do that, I guess?
Just quote tweet it as, here's the guy.
All right. Oh, yeah. That's what you were trying to do. I couldn't think of the term. All right, let's back up. I've got a quote tweet him. I think he's funny. And we need more funny on Twitter than combative. I'm going to tweet the one with the picture of the dolls, because that's pretty damn funny. Here he is, funniest politician in the world.
I thought a counselor was like a lawyer, dude.
It is. That's an also not. That's not spelled like this. This is a British term. This is a. All right. That's what I tweeted. Is here he is, funniest poll in the world. Boom. So there you go. So look for me there, and you'll see it.
Nice.
Boom. Bada bing.
What time is it? You want to do a conference call here? And then
sure,
that way you can
bust
do
it out.
Yeah, I just sent it to you.
All right. So you have an opening for this, so you don't know what the hell it is, right?
No, just give me a second. Just give me a second. Why don't you like do a read or something?
La da da. Curly Russian. Curly from the Three Stooges.
Oh, can you actually sing that? Go ahead and do that.
What, Curly?
Yeah, we'll put that on the mix.
I can't do it because I got a cold. Oh, my goodness. All right, let's see here. Did you send it to me on text? That's what you intended to do. You sent me a link to the story. We'll go into this later because I think a lot of people have interest in this locally. It's the column for the Myron Medcast projected coaches of the year in the various conferences. And interesting stories there, very interesting stories. So we'll share those with you guys in just a little bit. We'll do that as well. That's coming up in a few seconds. I'm getting my college basketball database in front of me so I can. I mean, again, back to some surprising stories. If you know what, I think you'll be able to hear this. I'd like for you to be able to hear this. The Roy Williams comments, hilarious. Did you not see these? I don't know if you saw these or not, but
I did not.
All right. Well, trust me, it's amusing, and I'm on Roy's side here. It's just, you know, when coaches get snippy, I'm like, all right, stop. But this guy, this deserves it. This is from after the game. They lost to Marquette at home pretty handily, as a matter of fact. And my friend Bill Rosinski actually tweeted this out. Good for you, Roy, about the comments. I think you'll be able to hear it. I'm going to play it from right here. You've been able to hear these pretty well. This is this. Let's see if I can get it for you. Here we go.
It's coming in really low. Give me 1 second. I'll find it. You can't hear it. You can't hear it.
Do you have Twitter up in front of you?
Yeah. Give me 1 sec. I'll track it down.
Just go to Bill Rosinski's Twitter. It's the second thing down. And we're still sitting here.
I'm loading it. Sorry, I didn't know you wanted this here.
Well, I've played everything from here for months now. Now all of a sudden,
well, you're coming in low, and you're refusing to adjust it. So this is what I got to do. All right, I got it. Stop it. Jeez.
What would you say to Carolina fans who are questioning whether or not it made sense to schedule this game considering the result?
Well, if I'd known we were going to lose, God almighty, I wouldn't schedule the thing. Come on, we can't operate in damn hindsight. God almighty. If you'd told me we were going to lose, hell yeah, we wouldn't have played the game. If you'd told me we were going to beat the Lakers, I'd have scheduled them. Carolina fans, they're not that dumb. If they are, I got no answers for them.
Drop the mic. Where'd you go? Hello?
Did you play it?
Yeah, I played it.
I don't hear anything.
Oh, it must have just gone through one channel. Oh, that's bad radio.
Playing it over here, whether you like it or not.
You can't hear it.
Yeah, you'll be able to hear it.
No, you can't.
Yep. La-di-da.
That's what I get for trying to hustle and do it. Here, give me 3 seconds. I didn't know you wanted this. I'm sorry.
Potting everything up as high as it'll go. Everything is up as high as it'll go. I'm blowing my own brains out. I'm taking one for the team. Here it is. That's as loud as it goes. You can hear the dog's heart beating in the background. Here we go. And play it right there. Unfortunately, I got Bigsby up now. I didn't want Bigsby. Making complete amateur radio of the program. How we're not winning awards is astounding. Freaking astounding to me.
Where's that Marconi?
All right, here we go. This is as loud as it goes. Hit it, Roy.
What would you say to Carolina? If they are, I got no answer.
And off he goes. What a stupid question. It really was. It was awesome. What would you say to fans? Question you scheduling the game. Well, yeah, I thought you guys hadn't suffered enough this year, so I said, who can I get out there who can kick our ass here tonight? That was quality.
What was the stupidest question you think you've ever asked?
Oh, I've ever asked?
Yeah. Like, is there one that, like, you know, you just were like, oh, man, that was dumb. Why did I do that? One that really, really stands out. Maybe not the dumbest one. Like one that you were just like, you know, we all have that moment where like a class project or something you go back to and you're like, oh god, that was so cringeworthy. Like, what was there? Was there ever one where you're just like, so Rick, basketball? Did you score more points or like? I mean, did you just like just something really, really dumb where they even looked at you like, really?
Yes, I was interviewing Jeff Capel, the current coach at Pitt, and I thought I was interviewing his father. That was a tad embarrassing. His father was a coach also, and they told me Jeff Capel's on the line. So I started asking him about his father's team, and he was like, I'm like halfway through the second question. He goes, you're asking about my dad. This is, and I was like, okay. Well, I know you guys are really close family, so I thought I'd ask about his team. He said, yeah, I don't want to talk about my dad. That wasn't good. It took me a long time before I could look Jeff in the eye again.
So anytime the Cards play Pitt now, do you just scurry away?
I just wave from across the gym. Hi, Coach. How are you? Nice to see you.
Just make a big point to ask about his dad. Hey, Jeff, how's your dad? Because I know you're not him.
Yeah, no. And he yells across the room, I'm not my father. All right. It's kind of like the guy, I'm not a cat. So, yeah, there's that. All right. Well, we lost the ability to do conference calls, so we're going to have to do it after Billis next hour. I apologize for the, even by our standards, high school radio, but we're still here. We're still plugging, and we'll keep marching on and see if we can get a little better as we march on. So, top of the hour.
Yeah, we got Billis on the other side. If anyone can write the ship, it's him.
Yeah. So, I sent a tweet out, which didn't make any sense either. I'm having a rough morning. By the way, I think I am drug-addled. I thought back to Nick was here with his girl last night, and I think back to some of the conversations, and I'm like, did I really say that?
You were in rare form last night, like, yeah, to the point where I was just like, you were.
Yeah, tell your girl if I offended her in any way, I'm sorry. I was only my addled brain thought I was having fun. So
you were playing.
I just remember. I remember you guys were talking about something. I was singing a song. I don't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah, you were doing that thing where like if someone said something, like anything.
I remember that.
You
part.
Would
that was fun.
You would react like the first thing that popped into your mind. Like so, if I don't know if I just said like, yeah, you know, he acts tough, but no, he's a big softy. You would start singing like the Mr. Softy song right. From like Ice Cream or something, and then that would go to. You know, a jingle for TCBY, and then that would bring you to like some other thing with letters. I mean, you were just a stream of consciousness.
Yeah, you mentioned she mentioned her friend Sonny, and I pulled up the song by Jimmy Webb, Sonny.
Yeah, and then proceeded to sing it for about 2.5 minutes.
Oh, it's good. Yeah, I had good music. I was entertained, if nothing else. But that's not good in radio because the people like we'd like to play.
Well, I'm so sorry about that, Rory Williams. I would have got that sound for you. Prior. I kind of tried to rush it, and it was only going through one channel. So our friends on 105.7 heard it, but everyone on 680 and you and maybe half the people on the stream were like...
Yeah, but then I just played it for them, and then they heard it.
Maybe.
They didn't hear it then either.
Well, it was just coming in quiet. What do you want me to say? Yeah. It was coming in quiet.
You potted
yourself up, and your levels are much better, which I very, very, very much appreciate that. But it was still
I'll be deaf by the end of the show. I'll be deaf by the end of the show. It's so loud in my headset, I can hardly stand it. This will be good. I'll have some more pains. I'll have ear pain now to go with back pain, ankle pain, leg pain. Good.
Well, what's the thing, you know, was that for major pain? Whenever one of the kids would complain about something, he would break their pinky so that then they weren't thinking about whatever was hurting. They were just thinking about their pinky instead.
Yeah, I'll try that approach, I guess. So I meant to send a tweet out that said, here he is, funniest Paul in the world. And I sent here he, period. Funniest Paul in the world. I forgot the word is. Here he, funniest Paul in the world.
I think that one you can get away with that one.
Here he. Here he, here ye. Maybe they're going to think, did he mean to say here ye? I don't know. I hear he's on drugs. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll try and do better. ESPN 680-1057.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker. Earn $14.50 per hour in an essential job, plus get money for college. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.